श्रीमद्भागवतम सेवन कैंटो चैप्टर फोर हिरण्यकशिपु टेररिजेस द यूनिवर्स टेक्स्ट 5-7. सो देयर आर एक्चुअली थ्री वर्सेस. आई विल रीड द सर्वजित जीसस सारा लोकाम सचिन महासुर देवा सुर मनुष्येन्द्र इंद्रा गंगोदगा Siddha Charanadijatran Prasim Pitri Patim Manu Yaksha Raksha Prasache San Preta Bhuta Patina Pi Sarva Sattva Patim Jutta Prasam Aniya Vishvajit Jahara Loka Palanam Stanani Sahatejasa. Translation: Hiranyakashipu became the conqueror of the entire universe. Indeed, that great demon conquered all the planets in the three worlds, upper, middle, and lower, including the planets of the human beings, the Gandharvas, the Garudas, the great serpents, the Siddhas, Charanas, and Vidyadharas, the great saints, Yamaraj, the Manus, the Yakshas, the Rakshasas, the Pisachas and their masters, and the masters of the ghosts and Bhutas. He defeated the rulers of all the other planets where there are living entities and brought them under his control. Conquering the abodes of all, he seized their power and influence. Purport. The word Garuda in this verse indicates that there are planets of great birds like Garuda. Similarly, the word Uruga indicates that there are planets of enormous serpents. Such a description of the various planets of the universe may challenge modern scientists who think that all planets but this Earth are vacant. These scientists claim to have launched excursions to the moon, where they have found no living entities, but only big craters full of dust and stone. Although in fact, the moon is so brilliant that it acts like the sun in illuminating the entire universe. Of course, it is not possible to convince modern scientists of the Vedic information about the universe. Nonetheless, we are not very much impressed by the words of scientists who say that all other planets are vacant and that only the Earth is full of living entities. Om Yenitivanandasya Gananjana Shlokaya Chakshun Nidhan Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Jai Shri Krishna Jai Tanya Prabhu Nidhananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasani Gauravata Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama We should not consider him in such a way that those people, if we rid the world of those people, then you'll see a change. You may think that human beings are becoming more civilized and advanced, but actually the last century, the 20th century, was the most violent century known to human beings. In terms of how many people died from military conflict, plus how many people died from genocide. Genocide means singling out a certain people as the cause of all your problems and then seeking to eradicate every trace of those people. So we see that Hiranyakashipu, although abnormally powerful, is actually not completely different from the corruption present in ordinary human beings. Hiranyakashipu, as you know, did extraordinary austerities to get power from Lord Brahma. He shows determination, but all for the wrong thing. If we would use the determination that Hiranyakashipu showed in order to advance in our spiritual life, how glorious our life would be. Have you ever wondered why your determination is so weak? Just a little gust of wind from the material energy, from Maya, and we just fall on our face. We are very weak. Our determination is very feeble because we don't yet take adequate shelter of Krishna. Inherently, we are weak because we're so tiny. If we could actually appreciate our own tininess and insignificance, then we can properly appraise our situation. We're so tiny, and therefore we have the tendency to be overrun by the material energy. Because we're so tiny, just like the beach has a tendency to be covered by the tides. Because that's the way it is for the beach. Bhakti yoga means to arrange your lifestyle so that instead of being covered by the material energy, you're covered by Krishna's spiritual energy. This is the only choice you can really make as a tiny living entity with minute independence. You can choose how you're going to be swept away. So first, we should appreciate how tiny, infinitesimal we are. But that's only half of what we should understand. The other half is that if we take shelter of Krishna, who is the supreme strong, then we're in our natural constitutional position of strength. Not strength on our own, but in relation to Krishna, in connection to Krishna. Therefore, as we explain in so many programs that we do in Toronto, yoga means connection to the ultimate source of strength. Even though on our own we're so tiny and weak, the association of devotees is meant for giving us a support group to encourage one another how to take more shelter of Krishna. The more that you associate with those under the influence of the illusory energy, the more you'll be induced, the more you'll be encouraged to take shelter of the material energy. That's what material support groups are all about. They convince you that material solutions are the answers to all problems. More money, more education, take better care of your body, and that's it. We are not against money, we are not against education, we are not against taking care of the body, but we don't consider pursuing those things to have solved our problems. That's the big difference. If you're sick and you go to a doctor and he manages to cure you, you're grateful, of course. You don't just tell the doctor, anyway, it doesn't matter what you did, we're not the body. At the same time, you don't think the doctor has solved your real problems in life. So you see, bhakti is deep. It's not for fanatics. It's for balance. But in order to understand what is a balance, you need clear vision. Often our devotees make the mistake of thinking that from a contaminated viewpoint, from a foggy viewpoint, they can see how to balance their life. No, You can only see the proper balance between material and spiritual activities when you have clear vision. So therefore, we need help to develop that clear vision, how to balance our life. Otherwise, when our vision is covered by the fog of Maya, we'll just be trying to balance two material things. Both sides of the scale will be Maya. Because we can't see Krishna clearly enough. We can't see Krishna's service clearly enough. So we need the association of devotees so that we can see straight. You can imagine driving a car and the windscreen is just caked with mud. How can you see where you're going? But that's how we operate in the material world, in our so-called innocent life. Our windscreen is just caked with mud and dirt, yet we're still going to drive. Don't worry, I know what I'm doing, I know where I'm going. This is our arrogance. And as long as we have that arrogance, we can't properly take shelter of Krishna. Just see in yourself how this can well up in you. I know what I'm doing. I know me. I know what I need. I know what's good for me. Our real self is always and eternally in connection with Krishna. That means to understand ourselves, we also have to understand Krishna. That's our strength. There's no such thing as your existing on your own. We are always eternally existing in relationship with Krishna. So self-realization begins with understanding yourself as part of Krishna. Simply to understand your spirit soul is a good beginning, but it's not the major step forward. The major step forward is to understand your spiritual identity in relationship to Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam gives you incalculable help to do that. When you hear Bhagavatam, you are seeing Krishna. We discussed this last night at the Bhakti Lounge. How to see Krishna. You cannot see Krishna with your physical eyes. You see Krishna through sound vibration, through service, through the authorized methods of using your senses for Krishna's pleasure. You actually see Krishna. But you may not recognize at first what's going on. You may say, well, I'm hearing the kirtan. I don't see Krishna. But as you become more mature in bhakti, you will realize that as you're hearing the kirtan, you are seeing. Just like a beginning student in biology. Perhaps you can ask Vrindavan Vinodini, she can tell you about biology. When you first look into a powerful microscope, do you know what you're seeing? Have any of you had that experience? The university, they take you into the laboratory and, okay, look through these microscopes at the specimen. And you look and you don't know what you're seeing until the teacher tells you. You are looking at a bacteria named such and such. Oh, okay. Right? So right before your eyes is something, but you don't know what it is until you hear. Through the ear, the teacher explains, this is what you're looking at. So, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, gradually you realize that you are seeing Krishna. You're seeing Krishna through the ear. By hearing about Krishna, Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. Krishna is appearing to you as Srimad Bhagavatam.
Once we properly understand our
dependency on Krishna, then real life can begin. Otherwise, we're so arrogant. We are so sure that we know what to do with ourselves. Meanwhile, the bodily hormones are driving us crazy. And we become dependent on the hormones of the body, which dictate our life. This is how weak we are, materially speaking. But if we take shelter of Krishna, then we can actually solve our problems. Because our original problem is disconnection from Krishna. So remember, in the association of those who are materially contaminated, you will be inspired to make material solutions to the problems of your life. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, the first step in your spiritual life, the first solid, firm, and secure step, is to give up the association of those who are dedicated to making material solutions. It's very contaminating. Your consciousness will submit to such futile discussions, which go on and on and on. Millennium after millennium, people are trying to make material solutions to material problems. But when you associate with those who are dedicated to the eternal, you don't become inspired to do such foolishness. So bhakti yoga is presenting the real world. That means the individual soul in relation to the Supreme Soul. Hiranyakashipu, he's probably the greatest example we know of someone who made material solutions for everything. So much so that he thought by performing material austerities that had never been done before, he would get all the power of the universe. He wanted to be immortal. But Brahma told him, that's not possible. No demigod can give the benediction of immortality. Only Vishnu can revive our eternal spiritual existence. And of course, Hiranyakashipu didn't want to hear that. Well, he was so angry, hateful, and envious of the Supreme Personality of God. All he could do was think over and over again, I must kill Vishnu because Vishnu killed my brother Hiranyaksha. He was possessed by that revenge. Now, it's interesting that he and his fellow demons of the time did accept the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's just that they didn't want to follow any orders, any instructions. It's like some hoodlum on the street who accepts the existence of the police department, but not going to do what they say. So that was Hiranyakashipu. He was, in that sense, more advanced than the atheists and materialists of today. Hiranyakashipu recognized there is a supreme authority, but we're not going to follow him. He should just mind his own business, leave us alone. So when Brahma told Hiranyakashipu, I can't give immortality, Hiranyakashipu thought he was so clever, he came up with a backdoor way how to become what he thought was immortal. He asked Brahma for a full coverage insurance policy. I can't be killed by a man. I can't be killed by an animal. I can't be killed in the day. I can't be killed at night. I can't be killed inside. I can't be killed outside. So that way, he thought he made his insurance policy in such a way that everything was covered. So therefore, the end result, he thought, was, I am immortal! Let's see how tricky I am. Brahma told him,
"Well,
these benedictions I've given you are difficult." That's verse 2. Lord Brahma said, "O Hiranyakashipu, these benedictions for which you have asked are difficult to obtain for most men. Nonetheless, O my son, I shall grant you them, although they are generally not available." Now, this is Brahma's way of indirectly telling Hiranyakashipu, these benedictions, although so great, are going to be such a burden for you. In that way, material benedictions are not actually benedictions. There's always a price to pay. There's always a curse attached to them. Just think about it. In your life, when you achieve some material benediction on a scale relative to you, was it ever a clear 100% victory? With no strings attached, I've got it, I won, it's all mine. No, there are only so many problems riding along. So Brahma's trying to explain this to Hiranyakashipu. But of course, Hiranyakashipu can't pick up the point. He's so attached. Maybe you can remember times when you were so attached to something you couldn't hear when someone tried to give you words of wisdom. All you knew was, I just have to have it. I want it. It looks great to me. So Brahma spoke subtly to Hiranyakashipu. The weight from these benedictions is going to be a problem for you. But a materialist can't think in that way. Because after all, the way to deal with material problems is with material solutions. What else are you supposed to do? With our developed spiritual intelligence, we can look at the material attempt at life and see how indeed, even when you do achieve something so-called good, there's always a kickback, there's always problems associated with it. Just think, when you've longed, in your life, when you've longed for something, for some material solution. Something or someone to make you happy. We were also discussing this point last night. Think about it. When you were hankering for someone or something to make you happy. And if you actually got that thing or person, was it ever a clear-cut victory? No, there are always complications, letdowns, disappointments. You see, you can't get a clear victory in this world. There's always problems attached to every so-called step forward. The game is rigged. We have a hard time believing that, don't we? Oh, life should be fair and give everyone an equal opportunity for material happiness. It should be a level playing field. Oh, forget it. The average person has no idea how, in terms of politics and economics, they don't have a clue what's really going on. They don't have the slightest idea how the whole deck of cards is stacked against them. They simply think, I can vote, therefore one man, one vote. That's the story of society. Those who are more shrewd about power and control know how to manipulate. So in this way, there's always some power imbalance in the material world. And as soon as you strive for material advancement, whether as an individual or as a society, you're going to be shafted. The game is rigged in that way. It's like a video game. that always brings about the same conclusion, no matter which way you go. When I was a little kid, there was a very popular TV show. Maybe some of you have seen it, called The Three Stooges. You've seen reruns of that. And so there was Three Stooges. That means three super dumb guys. I don't think the word is used anymore. Call like someone a stooge. We don't do that. That's right. That's what it means. Super dumb, imbecile. So they were three of them. They were brothers. And one, he was slightly smarter than the others. Dumb, you know, stooge. So he was like the intellectual leader of the trio. So, and there was one who was a little bit dumber than the other two. So they would always, the other two would always pick on him. You're really stupid. You're really a stupid stooge. we're a normal stooge, but you're really stupid. So whenever he would do something wrong, the slightly more intelligent stooge would hold up his hand. And he would say to the dumber, the stooge was more dumb, pick two fingers. And so the dumb stooge would pick two fingers, okay. And then the more intelligent stooge would jab him in the eyes. 5 minutes later, the dumb stooge would make another mistake. And again, the leader, who was slightly more intelligent, pick two fingers. So the dumb stooge, okay, the last time I did this one and this one, I got poked in the eye. So this time, I'll pick this one and this one. And same thing. 5 minutes later, he does something dumb again. And so the leader says, all right. Pick two fingers. And the dumb stooge is sweating like, because no matter what fingers you choose, it's the same result. So that's our interaction with the material energy. You can just see Maya saying to you, and I know better now. I'm mature. I studied in school. I know history. I know what's good for me. Okay, now I made a mistake last time when I picked those two fingers, but this time it's going to be different. That's the mantra of material existence. This time it's going to be different. No matter what they're pursuing, money, relationships, fame, this time it's going to be different. When you build up your life individually, when you build up your society, it's always, this time it's going to be different. And it never is. So if you're smart enough to see through this, you can save yourself so much trouble. What causes you to be victimized? It's because we don't want to depend on others. We actually think we have abilities. Ladies think they have charms. The men think they have strength and expertise. And this way, material existence just goes on and on and on. So Hiranyakashipu, he thought that he had received the greatest benedictions from Brahma, even though Brahma warned him. These are very difficult weights to carry. All this power and control that you now have. The general principle is that any material gain actually becomes a chain around your neck. It's only when we know how to use the material world in Krishna's service that we actually have obtained a benediction. The bhakti knowledge, as Rupa Goswami explains, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Vimshate, the bhakti wealth is knowledge of how to use everything for Krishna's pleasure, even material things. That is real wealth.
That is a real benediction, that kind of knowledge. And that benediction does not burden you. It actually increases your spiritual life because you can see how to use everything in Krishna's service. Not for yourself, but for Krishna's service. So the story of Hiranyakashipu is that even though he became the most powerful person in the universe, that so-called benediction was going to crush him. Because his envy increased, his madness increased, and he was dissatisfied. So his control is being described in this verse, in the verses we went over today. How Hiranyakashipu took control of the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada points out that how foolish can you be to think that only this one planet amongst countless planets in the universe has life. You may not be able to see the life, but that doesn't mean there's no life on other planets. Your senses limit your perception. Now the average person, even an educated person, can't even understand what's going on behind the scenes of their own political and economic system. And yet they're going to make pronouncements about what goes on other planets. We don't see any life there. Do you see any life? Ask the average person, do they understand what's happening on Wall Street? They can even read so many books about it. Those evil bankers, but they still don't understand it. It's too complicated. They can't even understand things in this world. Do you understand what your military is up to? Do you understand what the government's up to? So what to speak of trying to understand what goes on other planets? So Srila Prabhupada is making us humble and pointing out the foolishness of thinking that only one planet has life. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, a characteristic of the spirit soul is sarvaga. The spirit soul appears everywhere in appropriate bodies. There's no place devoid of life. Just like you can look at this planet and see every possible place is full of living entities. Whether that place is extremely hot, extremely cold, deserts, jungles, whatever, there's life. So why would you assume that only this planet has life and the others don't? The time will come, you can be sure, that one day human society will realize it was the greatest foolishness to think that only Earth has life. So that, if you have that delusion, no doubt when you read these verses, you'll wonder, what is all this talk about intelligent life on other planets? Well, first our challenge is to find intelligent life on Earth. We're looking hard for it. We see the whole world is lost in uncontrolled senses and material solutions. That's no sign of intelligence. Now, Hiranyakashipu became so powerful in controlling the universe that even like Narada Muni was singing his glories. So that shows you that sometimes the way the world is, even saintly persons have to cooperate externally with the so-called powers that be. It's only temporary, but sometimes this world becomes such a difficult place that even someone like Narada Muni, who wanders throughout the universe, chanting Krishna's glories, inspiring persons to come to Krishna, even he apparently had to cooperate to some degree with the regime of Hiranyakasipu. Of course, Narada Muni is never subordinate. He's never really submissive to materialistic persons. But sometimes in order to do one's service, one has to acknowledge that you're in a system of control. And so you externally offer deference. So Narada Muni would do that. Externally, he would, you know, he carries his veena. Externally, he would sing some songs glorifying Hiranyakasipu. Musicians, on their eternal quest for fame in this world, they know that sometimes they have to compromise. They have to sing songs and play at places they normally wouldn't, but they think it's all part of becoming successful. So, Narada Muni, of course, is no ordinary musician. He eternally glorifies Krishna. But even he Bhagavatam says, that even he was singing some songs glorifying Hiranyakasipu. Knowing, of course, that Hiranyakasipu's regime would be very short-lived. No doubt Narada Muni had, with his vision to see past, present, and future, while he's singing songs glorifying Hiranyakasipu, he's thinking, he'll be gone pretty soon. Now, let's look at the emotions of Hiranyakasipu. So many of you have commented how prior to your taking up the bhakti path, you were longing for genuine happiness, something or someone that would bring you what you need. So that's an emotional thing. And we've explained many times a term from behavioral psychology called impact bias. It's generally accepted now that human beings always make the mistake of overestimating what a future achievement or acquisition will bring them. You overestimate the emotional bang. If you can really understand this and its significance, you can save yourself a lot of trouble. And whenever I project into the future, oh, when I get this, when I do that, when I'm with this person, I can just see how I'm going to feel. So I'll work hard to get to that point. So even material psychologists have, through their research, have understood the human tendency is to always overestimate. You overshoot the mark. You always think that a future achievement is going to give you much more happiness. But it never turns out that way. Now you think that you would learn the lesson and stop doing that. But even the erudite social psychologists, behavioral economists, so forth, who have figured this all out, they say they know they themselves fall victim to it, this syndrome, again and again and again. It's Maya. You can't conquer over Maya without Krishna's help. You may even gain some partial insight into Maya, but still you can't give it up. The only way you avoid this perpetual delusion is to take shelter of Krishna. So then we have to analyze why we are hesitant to take shelter of Krishna. So let's look at Hiranyakasipu. He had projected, once I become practically immortal. I'll be the most powerful person. So he was anticipating how he's going to feel by getting all the benedictions from Brahma, which would allow him to amass such unprecedented power. So he's making a projection. But what actually was the result? The Bhagavatam points out his envy kept multiplying, his madness increased because of all the luxury and power, and he was dissatisfied. Now you think, why should Hiranyakashipu be envious of Vishnu when he's got control of the whole universe? Isn't that what you tell yourself sometimes? If I actually would get what I want, then I wouldn't be envious anymore. If I actually would get what I need, then I wouldn't be so mad after material advancement. That's what you tell yourself. As if material achievement and acquisition is going to satisfy you, you tell yourself, if I just get it, then I'll be all right. If I just increase my opulence to a certain level, then I'll say, that's enough. There used to be a social theory, which no one talks about anymore, but after the 19th and early 20th century, there was a popular social conception that let rich people become more rich and they'll gradually reach a point in which they get tired of it all and want to devote all their time and resources to help society. Yes, this is a popular notion some time ago, that if you just let them go for it, they'll reach a point where that's enough. You know, I don't need to work anymore. I don't need to accumulate real estate and finances anymore. Let me devote my full time to charity and philanthropy. And now everyone, of course, realizes it never happened like that. The more you get, the more you want. Power is very intoxicating and addictive. And this is what happened to Hiranyakashipu. His envy of Vishnu simply increased, even though Hiranyakashipu was materially the most powerful person in the universe. And not only that, besides his envy increasing, his madness also increased. This is something that may be a little difficult for you to understand, how the accumulation of sense gratification and opulence actually makes you mad. Well, how could that be? I know it's not the best thing, but how could it make you mad? Well, it depends how you define madness. Queen Kunti talks about this in the first canto of Bhagavatam. Edamana madak humana. The chasing of opulences makes you mad. What is the nature of that madness? You can't see the need for increasing your spiritual life. You can't see the practicality of it. And you become proud. Just see how much I have. I can get more. People like to be around famous people, powerful people, because they unconsciously or consciously pick up the madness in that way, and they call it enlivenment. I've been around such famous people, such powerful people, movers and shakers. That enlivenment is actually madness. You're becoming encouraged about seeking material fulfillment. That's simply madness. So Hiranyakashipu and all his opulence reached a point in which the relationship between him and the opulence was madness. That was the bottom line. Who can tell me what to do? Now you think he would be a little satisfied with all his acquisitions, control over the whole universe? This is the trick. Because he could not control his mind and senses, he was not satisfied. Now what makes you think you're going to be satisfied? with your material acquisitions. We can tell ourselves, oh, we don't want what we don't want what Hiranyakashipu had. We don't want much, we just want a little. Why doesn't Krishna understand that if we just would have a little, we'd be more peaceful and we'd serve him better? Right? Why doesn't Krishna just give us this and give us that, and then we'd be all right, and our devotional service would be more determined? Some of you may remember a song that little kids would sing. All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth. Well, that's how it starts as a little kid, you know, because, you know, generally you see little kids with their two front teeth missing. It looks funny. But that's just a part of being a kid. Your adult teeth haven't grown in yet, and so you're missing, you have a big gap in your mouth. So a little kid is singing, all I want for Christmas are my two front teeth. So that's how your desires start. And then, as you grow up, your material desires get bigger and bigger. So now it's, all I want is this, all I want is that. And you feel self-justified, right? I don't want much. All I want is, just catch yourself doing that. All I want is, in other words, Krishna, if you were smart, you would give me these things, because that's all I want, you see? And then I would really serve you with determination. All I want is, so everyone's got their all I want. So does Hiranyakashipu. All I want is control over the whole universe. That's all I want. As soon as we embark on that all I want path, we become dissatisfied. Except if our desire is all I want is devotional service to Krishna. All I want is to chant Krishna's name with attention. That's all I want. That's a different world. When all we want is service to Krishna and the ability to chant Krishna's name purely, we're in another universe. We're in the spiritual world. So the bhakti training process is to gradually bring us to the point that all I want is service to Krishna. All I want is to hear Krishna's glories, chant Krishna's glories. That's all I want. So you can change your whole existence. You can change the dimension that you live in from material to spiritual just by changing the all I want. Fill in the blank. Whatever you fill the blank in with, all I want is, that determines where you are in the spiritual and material world. And you can be in the spiritual world even in this lifetime just by filling out that blank in the right way. All I want is, and then you know which world you're in. So Hiranyakashipu thought he had it all worked out. One devotee the other day made a statement. Life is not an equation. So Hiranyakashipu, he would disagree. Life is an equation. Power. The more power you get, the more your life is fulfilled. Famous Western philosopher, he analyzed it that way. The whole meaning of the world is power, and the whole meaning of your individual life is power. As a living entity, you are always trying to exert power through time and space. But others are trying to do the same thing. So you have all these entities, this philosopher recognized, you have all these living entities who are pushing, they're on a power trip. He said, that's life. Life is a power trip. So you have all these living entities who are throwing their power trips around. So he said, how do you work things out then? You look for those on a power trip who you can relate to, and you form alliances with them. And in that way, you make a conspiracy of persons on a power trip whom you can relate to. And that way, the conspiracy goes on attacking the world for power. But everyone's on a power trip, according to this philosopher. We accept that from the material point of view. That's what it's all about. Now you may say, well, it's not like everyone's in Hiranyakashipu. We just want a few things, you know? We just want a few persons to do our bidding. We just want control over some resources, not the whole world. But what is the real difference between a big thief and a small thief? You can imagine yourself telling someone, you know, I only steal rubies, you steal diamonds. I'm a good person. I only go for rubies, but you are a filthy diamond thief. This is how we justify ourselves. Hiranyakashipu was on the ultimate power trip. It's all about power. I have the most power now. This is what he was so concerned about, looking at Prahlad. Prahlad! How come I can't kill you? Where? Kimbala, where do you get your power from? That was his concern. And what did Prahlad tell him? My power comes from the same place that your power comes from. In fact, my power comes from where all power comes from. That enraged Hiranyakashipu even more. All right, Prahlad, you're talking about someone more powerful than me. You're talking about the source of all power. I want to see that source. But, as we all know, we don't see any source of all power around. I don't see anyone. Prahlad, can you show me the source of all power? Of course you can't. Meanwhile, what is Lord Nrsingadev doing? He's peering out from the pillar, letting Prahlad know, I'm here. The source of all power is here. The ready guys, he can't see that. Prahlad, where is the source of all power? I am the foremost scientist. I've done an experiment, and the result is we don't see any supreme source of all power. So then, Hiranyakashipu came to his conclusion. Prahlad, it's obvious you're speaking nonsense. You're talking about something that doesn't exist, and therefore, it's logical what I'm going to do now. I'm going to cut your head off. But for Hiranyakashipu, the equation all added up. I am all powerful. My son is violating my power, so I killed him. What is the mystery? Why the confusion? So he told Prahlad, his five-year-old son, because you are speaking such nonsense, I will now cut off your head with my sword. I want to see the supreme powerful one come, the so-called supreme powerful one come and save you. Let's make a scientific experiment, Prahlad. You see, I have a sword. This sword will remove your head. Then, you say that there's a supreme powerful one? Well, let that supreme powerful one stop me from cutting your head off. We all know it's not going to happen. Alive, get ready to die. Hiranyakashipu thought he had it all figured out. And that also is the story of material existence. We think we got it all figured out. Catch yourself like that. All I want is this. Really, I understand myself now. I'm not a confused teenager anymore. I know what I need. Just this and that. If I get this and that, everything will be fine. That's why I'm working so hard. I know I should be chanting my rounds, but you know, all I want is, and then I'll be more serious about my spiritual life. That's the Bernie Fashifu mentality. He's a big example of it. But we feel some security because we're tiny examples of it. Bhakti means to demonstrate in action the reality of our dependency on Krishna. And that way we become strong. As Prahlad told his father, his father challenged, Kimbala, where do you get your strength from? Prahlad pointed out, I'm connected to Krishna, just like everyone. It's just that I'm conscious of that connection. So let us not go down the path of perpetual dissatisfaction. We acknowledge our dependency on Krishna by following Krishna's instructions how to live in this world in such a way that our spiritual desires increase so that finally we can say, all I want is Krishna's service. All I want is to be able to hear and chant Krishna's glories. It's all I want. So remember, how you fill in the blank, all I want is blank, that determines whether you're living in the material or spiritual world.